if it's a property that looks like a good option, you know, it's not something to really think about, you know, don't sleep on it. You can think about it during the inspection. You know, when we go to the properties, we got to write on them right away.
Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it. Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars. To claim your free course today. Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. With me is John Stiles with Bridge Realty. John, how are you doing?
I'm doing great today, Todd. How are you today? What you been up to?
I'm doing good. What I've been up to is just did a little spring break action last week with the kids. Didn't do anything too wild and crazy, but we brought them downhill skiing for a couple days up at the cold northern part of our state, which was actually beautiful and warm, actually. It was a lot of fun, though. I had my 4-year-old and my 8-year-old daughter out skiing, and my 4-year-old is he's kicking butt skiing. It's so fun watching both of them. It's just a blast. My daughter is getting courageous, which makes my wife nervous, but it makes me extremely excited because I love seeing that act of courage. And so she did a couple black diamonds, and we're doing some terrain parks. And, you know, I like going over some jumps and acting like a 20-year-old fool. 15-year-old fool or whatever. But so my daughter was following behind me, and I went over this big ramp jump, probably up about 8 feet in the air. And then it had a platform that was about 6 feet wide that was just flat. And then it went back down the same way it came up. And I go up and I clear it and I land on the downslope and go. And then I turn around to see where my two kids were, because they were both following me. And I look back and my daughter is up at about probably 3 or 4 feet up in the air, going over this jump, completely clears the 6-foot platform and lands on the downside. Landed perfectly. Oh, and I'm like, yes, Madeline. And I go up to her and I give her a high five. And then my wife's like, you got to tell her not to do that again. So I'm like, all right, Madeline, we got to pull back a little bit, you know. it was fun watching it. So she loved doing the tree runs and, you know, just the adventure of doing it. It's a lot of fun. So.
Yep. Looks like she's about to say hi to you in the back there.
Yeah. She's just gone from school. So she's right behind me.
Okay. Cool.
So I better say, Madeline, go do your homework now, okay?
Hi, Madeline. Did you have fun skiing? Yep. Good.
So, yeah. So that's my fun story. We hung out at the pool, of course. That's always fun. And did a bunch of hiking. My kids love to hike. So we went to one of our state parks on the way up there. We stopped and did about a 5-mile hike with the kids through the snow. So that was a lot of fun. So how about you? Anything going on with you?
Yeah. We've stayed home, stayed local. The real estate market seems to be picking up a little bit for me here. You know, I've got some more buyers looking. I got a listing that is active. We're getting some activity on it. These properties are going pretty fast. So that kind of stuff's been keeping me busy lately. So, yeah.
I haven't had my pulse on the single family market like I used to, but I'm assuming it's still going really, things are going fast. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yep. For my buyers that are in that market, whether 1 to 4 units, you know, we try to get out to the properties, you know, pretty much same day, next day, or, you know, pretty close to that. And that can be difficult, you know, when you have a couple different buyers and you've got a life too, and you've got other things that are demanding of your time. But yeah, I mean, that's just kind of the nature of it right now. We're trying to get out there, and if it's a property that looks like a good option, you know, it's not something to really think about. You know, don't sleep on it. You can think about it during the inspection. When we go to the properties, we got to write on them right away. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, and that's good to know. So having an agent like you that understands that look, you can't just go home and sleep on it, wait for a day or two. If this is a property you like and you think you want it, you've got to go now.
Yeah.
So it's nice having that, the agent that's going to do that. All right. Well, let's dig into today's topic a little bit. So we're just going to continue our apartment investing series. And you want to take it off, John?
Sure. Yeah. So what we're going to talk about today is just the different aspects of syndicating a deal. And first of all, why would we, again, syndicate? We've touched on this a little bit in the past, but now let's focus in a little bit deeper. Why would we want to syndicate a purchase of a property versus buying it some other way? So,
well, the short answer to that is, do you have $5 million or whatever sitting in the bank? Yeah. You know, if the answer is no, well, then how are you going to purchase that property? What are you going to do? So you've got to figure out how to get the money, right? Or just don't purchase the building, which is fine too. You know, so syndication just, it's not for everyone. You know, everybody doesn't have to be a syndicator. And I wouldn't expect everybody to want to become a syndicator. So you have to decide if it's something that works for you and works for your business. Because it truly, syndication is another business. And it's not just playtime. If you're going to syndicate, you know, you're dealing with other people's hard-earned dollars, and you should be taking a bank loan seriously as well. But I would say you need to take it extremely, extremely seriously if you're going to be raising private funds. So the short answer is, you syndicate to raise that down payment. So if we got a purchase and we need to raise, let's say, $5 million for the purchase equity, so the down payment, for the reserve fund that we're going to have, because we want to be able to cover, you know, about 7 to 9 months worth of mortgage payments. We also want to be able to cover some all of our closing expenses and all of our financing expenses. So we have to get that money somehow. And so yeah, doing a syndication is a powerful tool to be able to get that money. You know, you could also do, there's other ways. You could partner. You know, if I knew, for instance, John, maybe I have $2 million sitting in my bank and I think you have a couple million dollars, and maybe, you know, one of our mutual friends has a few million dollars, and we all want to pool our money together and go in on this building. That'd be a great way to do it as well. Now, when you do that, you still have to be careful, make sure that you're not doing a syndication, because John, if I say, hey, John, do you want to come in this building with me? And let's have our friend Frank, he can come in with us too, and we'll form a three-way partnership here and we'll get this deal done. But if John, if you're not active and if Frank's not active and if I'm the only one doing anything and I'm making all the decisions, I go, you guys just sit back and put your feet up and I'll just give you checks every month. Well, that's really a syndication. I just did a syndication. Even if it's my family members, people get confused. They think, oh, because it's family, because it's close friends, we really don't have to worry about the SEC. Well, I got news for you. You do. You want to make sure that what you're doing it right. So if you're going to be a partnership, it's a true partnership where, John, you make decisions, Frank makes decisions, I make decisions. We all collaborate together to make the decisions to make sure the property runs, and we all have our own tasks. So, but that's a way to do it. The other way would be to get some seller financing. So maybe you can convince the seller to give you financing, and now only instead of $5 million, now you got to come up with, let's say, $2 million. That's still a lot of money, but maybe you've got that. So that would be another way to do it. I don't know. I mean, selling an asset, of course, which is your own money still, but doing a 1031 exchange, be another great way. So,
yeah.
Or buying a smaller property that you can actually handle.
Sure. Yep. And so with this model of using other people's money and them being pretty passive, and you being the active, business operator, can you kind of touch on how is this similar or different from a real estate investment trust or a REIT?
Well, so a real estate investment trust or REIT is essentially, you know, it's a stock, right? You're not buying a building, you're buying part of a business. So you're getting shares of that company. So if that company does really well, you do well. If that company does poorly, your shares do poorly. But you're not getting necessarily a dividend and a return on that particular property. You're not sharing in the equity necessarily of the property. Your investment is based on how that company is doing, and it's based on the market too. It's based on the market emotions, or the up and down emotions that we all know happens in the stock market. Look at just a few weeks ago, or maybe it was a month ago already, but we are having these wild mood swings in the stock market. And I don't even know what they're for. Maybe somebody does, but it's like there's these mood swings that happen, and that's what the REIT's going to be. When I've got a syndication that I'm offering to other people, it's got maybe it does have mood swings because we still have markets, but it doesn't have the wild mood swings of the stock market. You know, it's got some, we're maybe making a little less income this month or a little bit more income this month because of some performance things, but it's based on the property, your equity, you've got equity in that property versus a share in a company.
Yeah. Well, that makes a lot of sense. So within a syndication, who are the different players and people involved?
Yeah, so you've got a couple main players. Okay, so first of all, you've got your general partner or your sponsor, and there might be more than one, but your general partner slash sponsor is going to be the company that's, you know, the main person or the main company. They're going to be the ones finding the deals. They're going to be the ones, you know, figuring out the market, picking the sub market, all that kind of stuff. And then they're going to be dealing with the brokers and property managers and all that kind of stuff. So they're going to be essentially the ringleader, right? The ones that put everything together. the ones that make sure the due diligence is done properly, the one that makes sure the financing is done properly, the ones that make sure the syndication gets put together. They're going to be putting that together with their attorneys, of course, but they're going to make sure the right team is in place to actually get this property up and running and performing the way the business plan shows. And they're going to be the one in charge of the business plan. Now, with all that said, they might have team members that help them through that whole process, but they're the ones that are in charge. They're the leadership group. Okay. Then you have the limited partners. Okay. So with a general partner, typically you get a percentage of the equity just for being the general partner. So typically you get, 20%, 30%, maybe even 40% of the property just for being the general partner. Okay. So then you've got the limited partners. The limited partners are the money, and they're the ones that are bringing the money into the deal, and they've got limited liability. This is all as a general, when I'm going through this stuff and people are maybe making notes and going to talk to their attorneys or somebody else that does syndications, this is all general. Okay. Everybody can do it a different way. So you got to remember that as well. So in general terms, the limited partners have very limited liability. If a tenant slips and falls, you're not going to get sued as a limited partner. Kind of like you got, a stock, shares at Walmart, somebody spills coffee on themselves, you don't get sued, but you do feel the financial ramifications of that, potentially. Your stocks don't perform as well. Same thing with the syndication. If you get sued, you're not going to personally get sued, John, but you're going to see less of a less of a quarterly check or monthly check or whatever it's given, that's going to go down. So the limited partners, the money people, they're going to get their return. And so typically all of the limited partners chunk together to do the down payment. Let's say that's $5 million like we used in the previous example. So $5 million equity. So whoever those people are, maybe it's 50 people. 50 people are going to make up the limited partnership, and that's going to get 60, 70, 80% of the profits.
And you're talking about the equity and the profits at the end of any given period.
Yeah. So you've got the monthly cash flow or the quarterly payout of the cash flow. And then you've got the sale at the very end or the refinance or whatever the strategy of the building is. So if you've got a sale in, let's say, 5 years, you get the benefits of that sale and you get the benefits of the cash flow throughout the deal.
Yeah.
And that gives you your return. Yeah. Now there's one more, and maybe more depending on how it's set up, but there's one more player, and that's the key principal or the loan sponsor. And so a lot of deals, if we're doing a big deal, let's say we're getting a $20 million loan. If you have less than a $20 million net worth, it's going to be challenging to get a loan. And so you have to bring in what are called key principals or loan sponsors to sign on the dotted line with you. And typically we're doing a non-recourse loan. So it's less risk, but it's still some risk. So usually you're giving up some sort of, dollar amount, some equity, whatever it might be, for them to come in and sign on the loan. So that's another player in the syndication. And quite frankly, player in just any deal, even if you're trying to buy your own deal, and you've got $5 million, but you only have $10 million net worth. So you're using half of your net worth to go towards buying that property. It's going to be still challenging to get a loan. So you might have to bring in a loan sponsor for even that type of deal. So,
sure. Mm-hmm. So in any of the individuals that are these different roles, they might be more than one role at a given time, correct?
Yeah. So as far as like how I set things up, my company is the general partner, and we also are, we're also going to be one of the limited partners. So we're going to invest it alongside our investors. And typically, you know, depending on the deal, but, we're at least one of the key principals. Now, as far as I don't take any more, my company doesn't take any more money for doing that. But we would be considered one of the key principals on that loan. And then depending on how big it is, might have to bring in more key principals, but, and a key principal oftentimes is a limited partner. I mean, oftentimes they're bringing money in the deal. They believe in the deal and then they go, hey, I'll sign on that deal as well if you give me an extra whatever, 2% or whatever it might be.
Yeah. You know, with a lot of the weight being on the general partner, I don't know where you might have planned to talk about this, but, you know, is there a succession plan should that person decide to move on, or if they pass away? What is the plan for who's going to replace that general partner after that time?
Well, you know, and I can't speak to this on a extreme, you know, higher level because I don't know what everybody's plan is, but you should have a backup plan. And so for instance, I do have a trust set up and certain people take over certain things. And so if I passed away, yes, that would be taken care of. I would say two things, don't die and, you know, make sure you're in it for the long haul. So, but all joking aside, obviously dying, we can't predict. But you know, the other part is if you're not going to be in it, well, why just don't set up a syndication. If you don't plan on following through to the end and to the sale, just don't be part of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, as far as dying, yeah, you should have something in place. If you've got partners, of course, that would be, you know, one of the things. But even with that, what happens if all the partners are traveling to business and, you know, they get in a plane crash or something crazy like that? You should have that backup plan for sure.
Yeah. Very good. So now that we kind of know the three key positions that would be involved with the syndication, you know, how do you go about putting these different people together and finding them and, you know, getting them all to be interested?
Well, yeah, I mean, that can be hard, right? I think you probably come from a similar background as me. You know, I grew up in a very middle-class home with middle-class parents that had middle-class friends. My friends were middle-class. I went to college, and the college that I went to produces, you know, mainly middle-class people. I went to become a high school teacher, so I'm surrounded again by middle-class people. And now, by saying all this, there's nothing wrong with middle-class people. But in fact, most of my friends still to this day and my family are still middle-class. And so there's nothing wrong with that. However, by virtue of being in middle-class, it means that you're not wealthy. And so you don't have a ton of money. So essentially you're surrounded by not wealthy people with a ton of money. A few of them might be frugal and might have saved up some money to be able to invest, but the large majority of them aren't. So you have to figure out, okay, how do I now surround myself also with wealthy people? And I'm not the type of person that says, get rid of your poor friends. I know there's plenty of gurus or teachers out there that say, you know, get rid of your poor friends and get new friends with money. I think that's crazy, but get rid of your friends that are maybe Debbie Downers every day that you can't stand being around. Sure. But whatever. That's a totally different topic, but well, it is kind of related. I mean, it's just, whatever. Some people like it. I personally, I'm friends with people that I enjoy being around, and I wouldn't be friends with them if I didn't enjoy being around them. So why would I get rid of them? Just because now I think I'm some rich guy, you know, it just doesn't make any sense to me. But So back on the topic, you have to figure out, you know, how can you get in front of people with money? And there's a lot of different answers, right? But essentially getting in front of those people. I mean, making sure you're setting yourself up for that. So who are you meeting? Who are you going out to meet for lunch? Who are you surrounding yourself with? Are you going to the right places that potentially could have wealthy people? And you're not going to meet wealthy people every time and just say, hey, I got the, or tell them what you're doing. And all of a sudden they're going to go, oh, hey, I got a $50,000 check for you. I'd love to give it to you today. It's just not going to happen that way. And you would love it to, but it doesn't. So you've got to continually be out there. Continually put yourself out there, continually go to charity and networking events, continue to go to business meetings, continually go to real estate meetings, all that kind of stuff. So anytime you can get yourself into rooms with wealthy people, take advantage of it and be involved. And then don't be that, nerdy kid in the corner that, you know, sits back at the dance and doesn't talk to anybody and doesn't dance with the girls because they're scared. Get in there and mingle and talk, and people want to talk to you. People want to know what you're doing. You've got value to add. I guarantee everybody's got some value to add. So get in there and talk, and everybody loves talking about themselves. And so start asking questions and get them to talk about themselves. Once they start talking about themselves, then they'll naturally start asking you some questions and start talking to you about you, and that's when you can bring in what you do and that type of stuff.
Yeah.
The other thing is don't be pushy. Some people are pushy and they get good results with it. For me personally, I don't like being pushy. I don't like being braggadocious. I try not to. I would rather be humble about everything and get people to ask me what I do and get people to ask me if they could invest versus me saying, hey, I'd love to have you invest. So that's kind of how I approach it, right or wrong. I'm not sure, but that's just how I approach it.
So I'd like to just kind of point out that, you know, people come from different personalities, different backgrounds. For me personally, you know, I'm kind of naturally an introvert, but as a real estate agent, I've had to grow into being comfortable talking to people, going to networking events, and just being open with what I do for a living. You know, that's that's kind of how I make a living. So in the same way, somebody that's trying to grow into being a syndicator is just going to need to become comfortable talking about, you know, what they do.
I'm kind of a mix, you know, so I'm a bit bipolar. I don't know. I shouldn't joke about that because people truly are. But for me, some days I just want to go to a meeting and don't want to talk to anybody. I just want to sit there and listen to what's being presented. I just want people to leave me alone. But you got to get out of that. You know, so even if you do feel like that, at least go and talk to a few people, and that way you gain a lot more value. So at every meeting, I would suggest at least making a target, you know, whether that's five people or eight people. I wouldn't go much more than, you know, 5 to 8 people, 10 at the most, that you're having real conversations with. And it depends on how long the conference is, of course. But if it's just like a 2-3 hour meeting, honestly, if you talk to 3 people at that meeting, you have good conversations with them, that's probably enough. So that to me then opens up, wow, I only got to talk to 3 people. Okay, I can do that. Versus when you go into a room and you go, okay, look around. I got to meet all these people in this room. I got to meet every single one. I got to spew my business cards out to everyone. That's the wrong attitude to go into it with. And then you, especially as an introvert, you're going to be intimidated by that. So I just think you've got to go into it with the mindset of you. That's your goal. When you go to a meeting, you're not going to learn the content at the meeting. You're going to meet and network with people. and just choose a small number, choose a number less than 10 and pick that and then meet those people and have good conversations with them.
So. Yeah. I was going to say something very similar. You know, I've gone to a few different networking meetings and I see some people leaving and they say, oh, I've already heard this content. I'm just going to go away. I'm like, why are you, don't you realize that the purpose is to come and meet people? And how many business cards are you walking away with? You know, how many connections are you making? So,
yeah.
Say one other thing I thought would be good to touch on here. If somebody's brand new to this syndication idea, one thought they might have is that, why can't I just advertise and put a ad in the newspaper that, hey, I'm looking for money. Isn't that a good option for getting people to join your syndication?
Yes and no. So you can do that now with the new rules. You have to know what you're doing and get it set up properly, right? You have to do a 506C offering. You have to do, in Minnesota, you can do what's called a SCORE offering or a MinVest offering. So these are different types of offerings where you can publicly post something similar to what you're saying. Now, the problem with that, though, John, is if you're brand new and you don't really know what you're doing, to try to do something like that, I think, is going to be challenging. So I think you really need to have your own network. I think those are better served for people who actually have been there and done that. I think it's going to be challenging if you're brand new to do something like that, to raise, especially if you're doing $1 million plus raise and you're trying to get it all from strangers. I think you're going to struggle mightily.
Yeah.
With that. You know, I talk with a lot with Zach Robbins, who's one of kind of the leaders of the MinVest and the crowdfunding in Minnesota. And Zach, you know, we've done several raises in the state of Minnesota, and I think they just broke the $1 million barrier. And that's with many raises, not just one. So you think about it, it took them, I think that was enacted about a year ago. It took them a year to get $1 million raised through several different raises. It's successful, which is awesome, but just shows you that there's challenges too if you don't know the people. So
yeah,
you really have to get out there and network. And the other thing too, there's people that are introverted. We're in a beautiful era for people that are introverted, because Facebook is awesome. Podcasts are awesome. You know, LinkedIn and just whatever, it's any kind of social media, get your blogs out there, start writing, start go on to Bigger Pockets and the other real estate networking sites, and just start writing and start giving your opinion, positive opinion about things. And, you know, get involved in a couple podcasts. You can get involved in podcasts where they don't even record your face. So you don't even need to, you just need to talk. And that's so much easier than actually being in a group. So today's age is actually not too bad for introverts, where you can get out there a little bit more. So that's the other thing, whether you're introverts or extroverts, is just get your name out there, go onto the podcast, do all that kind of stuff and start getting involved. So the more involved you be, the better.
Yep. Yeah. So definitely, you know, getting out there and then, you know, understanding that this topic is governed by the Securities and Exchange Commission. So that's why those different rules that you were talking about, those different offerings you were talking about, that's the body that governs this. And that's why, you know, unless you register and unless you follow those protocols, you can't just pull out an ad just out of the blue and go after that.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to know what you're doing. And whether you're going to go public or not, or private, you need to be sure that you are using a securities attorney. I mean, that's very, very important to make sure you're using a securities attorney. And make sure you're doing things above board, because the last thing you want to do is have the SEC breathing down your neck and trying to figure out what you're doing right or wrong and putting you in jail. I mean, that would be even worse. But, you know, you want to protect your money, your investors' money, make sure you're doing it right. So syndication is honestly, we talk about this topic because it's part of real estate investing. And I just caution anybody that's going to do it to make sure you're prepared to do it and to make sure you learn about it. And there's other material out there that you can learn a lot about it and just continue to learn and before you just go about doing it. And personally, I like it. And I think it's best if you've done your own deals and you have had your own money in the deals. And then while you're doing your first syndication, have your own money into that first syndication as well. So it's just to be taken extremely, extremely serious when you're dealing with other people's money to make sure that you can truly treat their money with the highest regard, you know, better than yours. So,
yeah. Well, very good. I think that kind of covers the topic that we wanted to cover today. Are there any final thoughts to kind of summarize it?
You know, a couple things on we talked about networking. The one thing I think I didn't mention is, you know, volunteering. Go out and get involved with, you know, charities and organizations and stuff like that. And there's going to be wealthy people in there, people with money, and not necessarily that should be, if that's your goal, is just to go there and, you know, get investors' money, I just wouldn't do it. But if you're going there for the greater good of the organization and truly give back in a positive way, you're going to get that benefit, plus you'll gain the trust of others and potentially get a few investors or at least connections that'll be positive. So, you know, and the very last thing I would say is don't write anybody off. People can be very unassuming. Two of my favorite investors, or I shouldn't say favorite, but two of my investors that I like and respect a lot and who I've had as investors for quite some time, they're just very unassuming. You know, they drive the older cars, they live in the modest house, or just your typical like middle-class person. You never expect them to be investors, and they're just fantastic people. And actually all my investors are fantastic people, but you just don't assume something. Just don't blow people off just because you think, oh, they don't have money. Build those important relationships. Even if they don't invest, the worst thing that's going to happen is you're going to have a good, valuable relationship, which is what life's all about. So,
yeah, you can really build some great relationships as you go about your business, you know?
Yeah. And if they don't have money, like I said, worst case is it's going to be a friendship or it could lead to other types of businesses as business opportunities as well. So,
yeah. Well, that's great. Just to kind of wrap things up here for the listeners, if you are just checking in here for the first time, I'd encourage you to go back and listen to the previous episodes of what we call Hump Day Hustle. This is about the 9th or 10th episode in a series about apartment investing. And so we've gone into quite a bit of detail about all the different steps along the way. And if we covered a step and then we kind of missed one detail or a question that you had, we'd encourage you to comment right there, either on the YouTube episode or on Facebook. Those are the main two places you can comment on our content here. So with that, Todd, do you want to close us out?
Yeah, absolutely. And the last thing is go on to, iTunes or wherever you're listening. Subscribe and, give us a 5-star rating and review if you can. And I appreciate everybody listening and make every day a Saturday.
Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone.
They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy to understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars to claim your free course today.